Well, welcome back, everybody. Get ready to waste another perfectly good hour of your time. Greg and James back here with our longtime friend and guest of the show here, Ron Grunwell of Great Lakes Trellis Supply. And we're going to talk everything about hop trellises and infrastructure today. So thanks for joining us, Ron.
Dave, thanks for reaching out and having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Outstanding. Time is of the essence right now. I've enjoyed watching our friends in New Zealand get all their big, hairy nightmare harvest over. And I said, oh, you know, it's about time for us to start talking about gearing things up here in this part of the hemisphere. So we're going to use this as our launching board for a series of two or three episodes specifically geared towards starting up the hop yard. And whether that's, you know, emergence and training of new plants, or we're going to start with the very basic bare bones of trellis and trellis maintenance. I know when we had our big yards, it was even before we had time to get out of the completely out, you know, snow cover gone, be out tensioning our trellises and getting everything working. So we wanted to focus on that right now. So, Ron, why don't you give us a little background about who you are and what you do and why people should actually care to hear what you have to say.
That last one's going to be tough. As you know, I got into the industry broken with a company called the Pine River Group. And I started right as the movement was starting throughout the Midwest. And we were kind of looking for something that was going to be our own instead of competing in all these other markets. And just kind of saw the opportunity, found the suppliers, and ran with it. And you know, have done over probably 1,500 acres of hops throughout the U.S. as far as providing poles and cables over these last 6 years. So
that's pretty outstanding. And you know, who are the people you're selling to? I mean, when we first started back in the dark ages, you know, there was nobody like Pine River Group around that we could even. And just for, you know, clarification, we bought poles from through you for several of our yards. But
yep.
When we first started, Greg, I mean, there was no place we could get. I mean, they were $150 a pole, and you'd have to get them from an industrial piling company or a utility supply company. So
yeah, and we'd have to know all the answers before we asked the questions. It was there was no one out there who could actually consult with us about, well, what do you need it for? How are you using it? What kind of strength do you need? So having someone like Ron around who actually is an expert in these things and can help consult as well as just throw a product at your door makes a big difference. And that did not exist for us 10 years ago.
Right.
No. And you know what? You still see that. The thing that was why you probably saw that is that 5-inch by 20-foot or 22-foot. I know you use 20-foot, James, but like 22-foot, is not a size. Like it was, really in between, size. Like the piling guys didn't want to make it because it was too small. And the guys that were making 12 and 14 foot for apple trellis, it was too big. And so like if people were going to actually try to make those sizes, then they were going to have to change some things around. And so they were charging the world for them because they weren't really conducive to the way that they were doing business.
Oh, got it.
And that's what really, helped us is that we found a company out in Western New York, who I'm still working with currently, that embraced it, that actually bought a peeler, that was conducive to making that size, efficiently. And they could get that fiber, pretty easily and pretty inexpensively. So like everything just kind of came together, which is really not how the wood industry works. It's usually pretty archaic in the way that things kind of come. You know, people have to see an opportunity. And that's why like we had so much success is because all of my competitors thought that this hop thing was just going to be just a niche, and they didn't feel like they, you know, warranted their time or their energy. And, I just kind of ran with it, and it definitely paid dividends.
Nice. Excellent. You know, one of the big questions that I get all the time running workshops is, well, I mean, you've been around hops long enough to know that, you know, they're not the easiest thing in the world to grow. So it seems to me like people get all wrapped up and they really want to think about the infrastructure because it seems like that's something that they can get their hands around really easy. You know, something easy to think about. It's something you build, and it's pretty, you know, immediately gratifying when you can see poles go on the ground and cable getting strung. What sort of pitfalls do you see for people in putting in a hop trellis that you know, even before they put pole one in the ground, that they should be taking into account?
Well, I mean, it's I think that it's just like anything. It's, you know, minimizing your infrastructure costs and, you know, and being able to, you know, I've seen a lot of people try to, you know, kind of ad lib a trellis or something, you know, whether they're using used telephone poles that they're getting dirt cheap, or even there's a steel manufacturer out there that, you know, they're saying that they could use less poles per acre, but the poles were $180 and they had 100-foot spacing. Wow. And, you know, and so there was a customer, I can't remember what state he was in, but he went 50 acres with that steel and it didn't work out. And I think he was out in 3 years. He went bankrupt in 3 years because he absolutely just did not think through, you know, all of the costs that come in with the trellis. And I think that that's the thing that catches most people off guard, is that everybody likes to save money, and I get that. But when you're dealing with poles, it's not always something that I think that people should go cheap on, because it's holding the entire thing up.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so that's what I feel like the pitfalls are, is that, you know, you got guys that are going to try to do an acre, start with an acre and then build into that. And, you know, and so I get like just doing a small yard and finding something inexpensive to try it out. But when you're starting to get into the 5, 10, 15, 20 acres and you're still, you know, making those, trying to find ways to cut costs, I find those to be pitfalls. So, I mean, everything that I sell, has a, you know, my southern yellow pine that I sell has a 30-year warranty on it. My red pine has a 25-year warranty on it. You know, they're all kiln dried and treated. So, you know, there's backing there. There's actually somebody to go to and say, hey, this broke. You know, I need you to replace it. And that's what you get.
Nice.
Yeah, I can't tell you over the years the number of folks who've reached out to us for assistance in various things who said, oh, I'm good on poles. I've got a buddy at the phone company, and I've got a line on some out of service telephone poles. And my response was always, you know, they're out of service for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those things have been in the ground. I think the turnaround on those poles are 20 years, I think, is what a lot of them. Some will keep them in for 15 years, but I mean, they've been holding stuff up for 15 years. You know, I mean, yeah, they're bigger. But I mean, you know, it's wood. It deteriorates. That chemical dissipates. You know, there's a lot of different things that can go in. And if you're using those to anchor your stuff off, I mean, you know, you ask anybody that builds trellis, and you know, the one thing they're not going to skimp on is the anchor trellis, because those are the hardest ones to change out.
Right. Oh, sure. And between that and the used cable stories I would get. So public service announcement here. Having a friend who works at the phone company does not mean you have a free trellis.
That's true.
No.
And you're probably
Inexpensive trellis that may or may not work.
Well, you can be guaranteed you'll be replacing it pretty soon. That's very
exactly
important. Cool.
And I've had that a lot though too. I've had a lot of guys where I had a bid on something and they're just like, you know, you're just too expensive. And I don't think it's that I've ever been too expensive. I just don't think that they've, you know, factored in the actual true cost of the trellis part of it. And so, you know, they'll buy the used stuff, or they'll go all that stuff. And, you know, and then I'll end up talking to them 2 years later saying, you remember me? Oh, I need this, this, and this. And it's like, man, you should have just got it the first time.
Do you ever see the flip side occur? Someone who vastly overdoes it and puts in, you know, the Taj Mahal of a trellis, and it's
there's a couple of companies that I've worked with over the years that wanted to do just all southern yellow pine, and southern yellow pine is just, it's just more expensive, it's more utilized in a lot of different markets. It's a commodity that's really heavy in the building industry. So if they're making more off of a log that is making 4x4s and 2x4s or whatever than they can by just peeling it and selling it as a whole, then that affects the actual what's available, and it makes that price go up. You know, so when people say that, you know, they want to do a whole yard, with All Southern Yellow Pine, and it's like, yeah, I mean, it will, it's going to be a very nice yard, but you also spent 35 to 40% more, you know, because you can change out line poles if they go bad. And they have the warranty on them. So yeah, people do way overdo it sometimes. But I mean, I think it's both ends of the spectrum, you know, that, you know, some people don't do enough and it doesn't work and they do too much and they have to sell a hell of a lot more hops to make that money back.
So for the folks out there who are, I mean, people who have a trellis and are working on trellises, that's one thing, but folks that are starting out, and I think that's a fair amount of our listeners, people who are interested in getting into this and aren't sure how. How would you recommend that entry point if they're putting up, say, half an acre? What's the right way to do that that's not crazy expensive but is still not only solid but scalable going forward?
That's a good question. And I hear it all the time because a lot of the times people just want a hop pole. And I think that the reason why I've been successful in the industry and I've made the connections and the contacts and friendships that I have is because I haven't always just sold people what they want, especially people that are starting. And and I don't actually grow hops, but I am around enough guys to know what works, what doesn't work. This is why they do it. This is why it's been successful, that I feel that I can actually tell somebody that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to this. And it's, you know, I'll see guys that, you know, will want to try one row or something like that. And, you know, but they have this design to tap into that existing small part and they want to go 10 acres. And so they want to just get, you know, some poles and they don't really care what it is. But what they don't understand is that if you're going to build out 10 acres, then that has to become part of the actual trellis system for harvesting for everything. And you would just end up having to redo that. So spend a little bit more money, buy a bundle of the yellow, buy a couple bundles of the red, have some on hand extra for your next build or whatever. But just don't get something that's inexpensive because you're only doing a little bit. Because if you decide to go larger, then you could actually spend more than you spent initially on rearranging it or buying different stuff.
So you mean we're supposed to think about this before we start doing it?
For a while there, I don't know if people were.
I have, exactly.
some of the stuff that I was selling and was going down the road, because I do work with Apple guys. And these Apple guys are generational. So, I mean, some of these guys are older gentlemen. Some are the new kids coming in and stuff like that. But they've been doing it for so long and they have systems in place on how to do it. And they come from a farming background. And, you know, with the hops thing, I mean, I saw a lot of people spend a lot of money just because they liked craft beer. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of sexy, you know, and they wanted to grow hops and they've never grown anything. And I know a lot of guys that, you know, go, wow, this is a lot more work than I thought.
That is a familiar story.
Yeah, very familiar. Yeah, that's going to be the name of our first album.
Yeah, this is more, no more summers.
No more summers. Yep, yeah, exactly. Yep. You've never loved winter more in your life. Nice. Okay, so something that I always thought was, you know, because I've done a lot of and still do a lot of trellis designs. Ron, you've mentioned different types of wood, and people come to me all the time asking me, hey, you know, I want to use, you know, what's the best kind of pole to use? You know, I want to use, do I have to use treated? I want to use cedar. I'm going to go with Black Locust from the Natural Resources Department. Can you explain a little bit about the different types of poles that you move and, you know, what their attributes are? And the hidden factor that I think a lot of people don't think about is actually getting these poles on site.
You know, that is a big thing, you know, and so, you know, a lot of people buy what is historic to their region. You know, all the guys out in, you know, Yakima have been using lodgepole because A, it's everywhere. B, it's inexpensive. But And they've also become accustomed to its failure. So, you know, lodgepole doesn't take treatment very well. They sell a lot of it not treated or green treated, which means that they basically go and they cut it and they peel it and they treat it. Well, it's got all of that moisture in it, kind of the equivalent of just peeing on them, because it just doesn't get any get any penetration whatsoever.
Yep.
And that's why that's what's allowed like Ken from Rot Block to actually have a very viable business, because he's saying, I can give you 3 or 4 more years on these poles that you're only getting 3 or 4 on
right
now. And so, you know, that's so there's a lot of differences, and you know, people that aren't people that are hop growers aren't real, you know, up to date on wood
right.
and what it does, and what you should use and what you shouldn't use. And you know, back in 2013-14, we saw a pretty, you know, a lot of guys wanting to start out that were wanting to do organic. So those were going to be your Black Locust guys, or your Tamarack guys, mm-hmm. because they needed a nice product that wasn't treated. And we don't really see any organic anymore.
Right.
You know, I just don't get calls for it, but those are still good poles. There's just a lot more legwork. You know, one person, you know, will be like, oh, I can buy a Tamarack pole for $25. Well, it's barky. And you got to shave 5 feet of bark mm-hmm. off each one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, that that's part of it. So I buy Tamarack, I actually have Tamarack sitting on the ground, in Western, Wisconsin that I actually brought to a peeler, and it's straight. So that's a really good pole the Tamarack is a hardwood. That's naturally rot resistant, insect, resistant. And, you know, it would probably give you a good 15 to 20 years, you know, without having any of the treatment on there. And you could do organic, or you could just have a beefy solid wood pole. You know, obviously my number one seller that I have is the Red Pine. Red Pine, you know, is rather inexpensive. It's been trading very low over the last few years. There's a lot of availability, so there's a lot of fiber out there, mm-hmm. which has kind of brought the prices down. But they, you know, they do a really good job of being an interior pole. And you know, you're not going to want to do a full trellis with all 522 reds. It's mm-hmm. just, it's not going to be strong enough, and that's why we I buy Southern Yellow Pine for those, or the Tamarack, because they, by using Red Pine, you can save money and they'll hold it up. But it also takes a lot of the stress off. You know, a 5-inch by 22-foot Southern Yellow Pine compared to a 5-inch by 22-foot Red Pine is about 150 pounds different. Mm-hmm. So in the same size of pole, the Southern Yellow Pine is 150 pounds more, and it's a lot denser. The knot clusters are smaller and they're spread out more. So you have less breaking points in the actual wood itself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could see that. So you know, spend your money where you've got a lot of lateral force, like on the perimeter. And
exactly.
And where you basically just need a prop pole in the middle to keep the line up, you know, go with your Red Pine. And I was always a big fan of that. Plus, you know, the majority of your poles are in the interior, and that 150 pounds of pole is no joke when you're dealing with hundreds of poles and moving them around, certainly for the small grower doing it by hand. That helps out a lot. But definitely, going with the heavier poles on the perimeter is an absolutely good idea.
Yeah, I've sold a lot of Southern Yellow Pine in my days now, and I've never heard of any failures even yet.
Yeah.
Even at a job the size of MI Local that I did, you know, the 200-acre job, that had a lot of Southern Yellow Pine, and we've had no failures, and that's been up for almost 5 years now.
Nice.
So they do have breaks in the Red Pine. But like I said, those are a lot easier to replace when they're your inline than, you know, because you got people cementing their anchors in now too. So that really kind of causes an issue.
Yes, it does a little bit. I'm not a fan of that, by the way, but you know,
needs must. It's hit and miss. Some guys do it, some don't, you know, but I've also, you know, there's a lot of those screw-in anchors out there with those helix that aren't double welded, and I've heard of those pulling up real quick. And so, you know, there's another reason, you know, it's, those are $6-7 a piece, and they're just got one side welded, and they probably can give you 3 years on them. Or you can buy the telephone pole anchors that are double welded, larger helix, and those are going to hold for 20 years.
Right. Yeah, that's that brings up another topic. I mean, we can put poles in the ground all day long, but ultimately, you know, the cable is carrying the load, and that has to be all that load has to be transferred to the ground. And that's your anchor point. And, you know, there's dozens of ways I've seen people do this. Do you get involved in any, you know, in selling any of that product at all?
Yeah, I do. I have two manufacturers that I buy the ground anchors from. I actually, so if people do want to do the cement option, I do have the anchor pins themselves that I buy from Pat Herman. Who does a lot of fab work. He builds top cutters, and he builds, you know, core twining towers and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I have multiple options, you know, from good, better to best.
Right. So what do you think is like the absolute minimum? Cause you know, people are, that's the first place they go when they start tallying up their prices on their trellis. They're going to start looking and say, oh balls, this is, you know, so this is where all that money goes that people tell me about. They're going to go to the least expensive. What's the like absolute low end? Like, don't go any less than this. It's like your bargain basement starter anchor.
Well, that's going to be an import, a Chinese import. And so basically it's going to have the driving handle on it. But the helix, which is what actually screws in and keeps it in the ground, it's going to be welded on along the shaft, but and it's going to come around, and it's going to be open on the other end.
Right.
And so those are the least expensive ones. And that's why you don't get that many years out of them, because they pull right up, because that trellis moves so much, especially with harvest and winds and whatever. You know, and then it goes, you know, and something like that's probably going to be $7-8 a piece.
So these are, you know, we're basically talking about glorified, like, you know, those screw anchors you get to hold down your picnic table in a windstorm.
That's exactly that.
Okay.
You know, you're right. People do look at the overall cost and go, man, where can I start making some of these cuts? You know, do I have to do this? And, you know, sometimes it's really hard to convince somebody. It's like, man, like, yes, I know these are $7 or $8, but the ones that are $18 to $20 are lifers. I mean, that's what, you know, the linemen use, and they keep these lot larger poles up for many of years. So, it's just, you know, it's just like anything. It's you, like I kind of circle back to is that, if you sell people what they think that they need, then you're doing them a disservice. You have to at least let them know that there are better products out there and why it's better. And I think that that's the one thing that I've done is I've been able to secure multiple lines and cost products out there. But I also can tell the customer, this is why they're different, and this is what's, you know, this is what you're going to get. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like you do it to sell and to make help somebody make an informed decision, but you also do it to let them know that when it doesn't work, that, you know, hey, we did talk about this, you know, because that happens a lot too.
I bet.
So. So it's kind of just reaffirming. I mean, you're trying to, you know, it's not like, you know, I mean, just because the price point is different on the two products, but it doesn't mean that I would make more money on the more expensive one. It's just a better product and it costs more. So I, you know, I don't really have a dog in the fight on which way they go. I just have to make sure that they know what they're buying.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. You're not, you know, you're not trying to upsell them. So your margin increases, you're giving them a better product, and that better product costs you more. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly it.
Yep. I don't care what people say about you, Ron. You're a good guy.
Yeah, it depends where you go. So, and usually a lot of that has happened, not because I've done a bad job. I mean, I think the reason why I've done, had the success I've had is because, like, I know that it is imperative if you're going to grow or get in the growing season that you have your material before plant, on the, at the end of April, so you can have a May plant. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever been for job performance. I think it's just been the conferences and having a couple too many drinks.
A couple 16 too many drinks. Yeah.
And of course, in your industry, Rod, I mean, one catastrophic failure that, word of mouth, everyone knows each other. One catastrophic failure is a problem. So, of course, you're looking to put in exactly what needs to be put in to make sure that someone's successful.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can go wrong on a lot of different stuff. And, especially in this industry, it's a large industry with Yakima, but it's a smaller industry when you remove Yakima, where a lot of people have been going to the conferences for a very long time together. And even though they live in different parts of the country, and if you have something that was either installed wrong or, came down because, we've had lightning strike an entire trellis and it took it down. And they kind of wanted to come back after us, because it failed. And I don't think insurance companies don't even, I think there's a thing in the paperwork that's saying that, acts of God aren't covered.
Right. Right.
And so that's, I guess one of those. So, but what I was alluding to is that they, for whatever reason, somebody has something, that didn't go right or they weren't satisfied. You gotta believe that they're going to tell 10 people. And if somebody's really happy, they're going to tell one or two. And that's just the way that I've always approached it, is that it's a lot harder to get business off of people that are happy than it is off making people mad.
Yeah,
sure. Sure. So, Ron, I know that you also work with apples and other crops. It's interesting because we've talked a lot about how, how we educate people on what they need to put up and putting in the right things and not spending too much and making sure you've built to spec. Do you ever deal with folks who have also grown other crops, had a certain way of doing things, and they come to you and say, yep, I'm doing hops, and this worked great for this crop, so I'm sure it'll work fine here. And look, people are stubborn, especially when they've been successful and they know something has worked in one venue. Have you had to deal with that in terms of talking someone out of doing something the wrong way that they've been successful at before?
No, because I wish that I had an example or some, but it's farmers, the way that they do their trellis is the right way and everybody else is stupid. Mm-hmm. That's just the way that it is. When it comes to farmers or people that have experience in row crops or anything of that sort that have a background, I kind of just, sell them. I do sell those guys what they need because I'm not going to be able to tell those guys anything because that's just how they are, maybe they do have 100 acres of apples and they want to do, 30 acres of hops. So, well, I think that a lot of those apple guys have been pretty successful because, it's a pretty, the two are similar as far as the work that's got to go in the trellis design. And the spray cycles and all that kind of stuff. So, it's the people that, that are just starting out that I give a hand to, and I'll refer them to somebody like James or, other customers that I have, that have a lot more knowledge than I do. If I can't actually answer that question, but as far as convincing people that have had experience, no, it's that they just, You hit it on the head. They are very stubborn, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But you just kind of let them ride it out.
Your comment about, they do it right and everyone else does it wrong, I think that flows to many, many industries.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh,
yeah, yeah. Oh, I see it big time. I do a lot in, like, viticulture, and those wine guys are pretty aggressive. I mean, they'll be right next to another farm, and they're like, oh, those idiots over there, don't do it this way. And it's just like, okay, you know. And so the same thing with apples, you know. And that's what's so funny is that just the different areas, you know, my Minnesota, Wisconsin apple market use all 14-foot product for their trellis. In Michigan, it's exclusively 5-inch by 12. And in Western New York, it's 4-inch, 4 by 12s. You know, that's, and so they're all growing the same kind of fruit with the same kind of yields. They're just completely doing it differently. So you know, I just don't try to intervene with those guys. But with hop trellis though, you know, I mean, I know that there's gotten to be a lot of, you know, like the V trellis as opposed to the straight line and stuff like that, you know, so there's been fads. Right now I'm, one of the most exclusive, well, I am exclusive distributor of the real German hop wire. And I've seen that absolutely just go gangbusters. I sell a lot more German barbed wire than I do quarter inch or 3/16 cable. It's not even comparable.
Well, let's talk about that. That's a good segue. Let's talk about cable. You know, we see a lot of things out there, and I certainly have my preferences, of which you know, and you have. I know you have your preferences, and you're wrong. But one of those stupid farmers you were just talking about. When people start, you know, the thing I love about new growers is when they're so excited, you know, they're thinking about this trellis, they've measured it out, you know, they've got, you know, if they're worth their salt, they've got, you know, a nice spreadsheet that shows all their costs and how many feet of cable they're going to need. And they say, oh, wow, I'm going to need 30,000 feet of, you know, whatever. And it shows up, it's like on two spools. And they're like, really? That's it?
Until
they start unwinding it, and then they're just like, holy balls, this is going to take a month of Sundays to put up. But yeah, there's definitely a you know, when it comes to, you know, pole spacing and how you lay out your grid work of poles and how you lay out your cabling, it is, at least to me, it seems, I go to the Northwest, they do it one way. I prefer to do it one way. You know, the Bohemia does it one way. New Zealand does it different. We should talk about that a little bit. Talk about cable types and sort of what you're seeing. So you were talking about the German barbed wire. It's barbless, but it's still got that wire knot on it. Correct?
Yeah, it's still kind of pokey. So it's a double spun 12.5 gauge smooth wire that's very, very heavily galvanized, a lot of zinc, and then it has the stops in it, basically, that it would look like a regular barbed wire. Well, North America barbed wire is only sold in 14 gauge low carb, and they all have the dies that make the points on them. And so that's not going to work. It's not going to be heavy enough. You're going to get a lot of cuts. It's going to do some damage with the real barbs on them. And so this German stuff was geared towards the way that they harvest with the wagons, as opposed to a top cutter. And so the spacing is there on where a lot of the normal spacing would be on a hop farm. So you're not kind of just trying to take a regular product and implement it into a hop yard and making the spacing work. It's four hops.
Right.
And so it really, you know, the reason why it's getting so popular is because, you know, I've heard Dan Wiesen from Empire say that at a certain point, it makes sense to go with regular wire, like a 5/16 anchor and a quarter inch or a 3/16 bind wire. But when it comes to harvesting, the top cutters are more expensive than the harvest wagons, and it takes more people to do it. Where the harvest wagon becomes a 2 or 3 man operation, it saves you a lot of money in those harvest costs. So he said, like, if you get up to about 50 acres, that's about the point where it's going to be more cost effective to go the traditional route. But anything under that, especially if you don't have the manpower, it's better to go with the barbed wire because you have less people out there and you've got one machine just pulling it at, you know, cutting at the bottom and pulling at the top.
Right.
And then it's just falling right back into that harvest wagon.
So, for people who aren't aware, you know, basically what this is doing is those knots that are on the wire knots that are on that 12 and a half gauge double wire are basically acting as stops so that the twine, as you're cutting the bottom, so there's this machine that attaches to the tractor that cuts the bottom and then pinches the bind and basically pulls it off the top. Off the top wire.
Yeah, it's it's pulling it down, and
exactly.
And that's why when this kind of farming and trellis design came here a few years ago, a lot of guys were trying to make it work with their traditional setup that they already had, mm-hmm. and it just became very labor intensive because it was trying to pull it and it was just sliding all the way down that smooth wire,
right?
And bunching up, and then have to run it back, and then have it's not advised. We have some guys that have always done the traditional wire system, a harvest wagon, and want to implement it and built their acreage moving forward with the German hop wire, mm-hmm. have bought just some clamps, and yes, it's expensive, but it saves you a lot of money in the long run. So what they'll do is they'll just buy the clamps. I sell the clamps, mm-hmm. and you just put it on that wire, the spacing that you want, and they'll stop it from the binds from going down.
Oh, sure.
So, yep. But it's a lot cheaper than taking down all of that wire that you've already bought. Cable that you've already bought, and then buying the barbed wire and then re-trellising it.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I can see that. So there are options, and I think it's interesting, and something we should highlight is we have to think about the process of farming and the process of harvest and where we want to be in X number of years, and that comes back to determining how we design our trellis and what materials we use. And certainly for new growers, that's kind of tough.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. And it goes back to what Greg was saying about generational farmers or people that have been in other industries. They have a general understanding of what it's going to take, what you're going to need, how to build a trellis the correct way in order to support plants of this size. But the thing about the uniqueness about hops are that there's a lot of people that have never grown anything,
right.
that don't understand that. And that's why guys like you, James, with the company you've got going now, it's a cost, but it could also save you a ton of money in the long run. I mean, if you're going, I can't tell you how many guys I've had that said, well, I was on YouTube and it says to do it like this, mm-hmm. And I was like, man, if you're getting ready to drop $40,000 on some trellis, mm-hmm. and you're getting your tips from YouTube, going to be a tough going. So the consultants, I think it's a great industry to be in because ultimately, yes, you're being, your knowledge and all the years you've been growing and you've had failure, you've had success, and you're gonna be able to convey that. And, I think that's worth its weight in gold.
You're absolutely right, and so many new folks getting into this. I'm curious what kind of breakage you run into. This is the upfront cost that I think a lot of people see and say, whoa, oh boy, and I'm not going to have a viable yield for 3 years. I'm not sure I can put that money in to start things out. Do you start working with a fair number of folks who aren't aware that that's what it's going to cost and the deal's over before it's even begun, or by the time they get to you, are they pretty sure they're moving ahead and the money is just what it is?
No, there's definitely the fair share of people that will bring it right up to finalizing the order before we get paid to deliver the product I completely misunderstood this or misread it, or I need to do this or something. Like, even when it comes to making sure that the soil can be used to grow, yes, you bought farmland, but if obviously James knows a lot more about this, but I can't tell you how many people that have had to spend thousands of dollars in making that soil become you know, a good soil to grow hops in. And so, like, there's just a lot of that stuff that you miss. And, you know, these shows that they do, like, I'm pretty close with Rob Sarine from Michigan State, and they do a great job. And I send a lot of people to the Michigan Hop Conference. But, like, the sheets that they hand out are the same sheets that they had 5 or 6 years ago when they started out. And there's a lot of, you know, there's things that are really a lot more money than what they are. And there's things that are a lot more money now than they were then. And so that doesn't always create transparency. And it also, it almost makes you, like, if they see something like, oh, poles are $30. Well, I, you know, that's less than what we own them for. And it's, so what are you basing it on? So then when you tell them that they're $38, $40, $42 and Southern Yellow Pine $60, they're like, oh, you're out of your, they told me it's only be $30. And then you have to try to figure out a way to convey to them that that's not right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and so you kind of come off as trying to sell something that they don't need when the beginning information wasn't correct.
That's gotta be a frustrating situation to deal with.
Well, I think it's more frustrating for the actual the grower. I mean, it's, you know, you know a lot of guys that are going to the shows and or whatever, you know, their heads are spinning anyways from all of this that they're taking in, from all, everything that you need to actually do a hop yard, and then you start moving numbers around when they think they actually have a final somewhat idea what it's going to cost, and then when it costs 15 or 20% more, you know, that's when that comes in. I'm going, man, I'm not going to have a yield or have anybody really, you know, want this stuff for a few years. I mean, I wasn't expecting to go part with that cash, and they just don't end up doing it.
Sure. And then what about the install side of things? I imagine you've got folks that work with you through this purchase side, and then they say, well, by the way, do you have anyone who can, you know, I don't have the technical expertise or the equipment to actually install what my vision is here. Do you do installation, or do you work with other folks who will do a custom installation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've a very large part of my business from the start. Actually, the only reason we got into hops was it was a phone call from Dan Wiesen back in 2012 saying, do you think you guys could do hop poles? And that's what kind of got us interested in it. So I've worked with Empire Farms for a while now. And they primarily, you know, they've got, I think, 20, 30 acres of their own, but they do some pretty large installs. And so I work with them very closely. I work with Tom Perez from Otter's Edge Farm pretty closely as well. They both have kind of a different approach to the way that you trellis. And it just really comes down to what the customer, you know, I think it comes down to what the customer can wrap their head around on how it's explained. And so, because, you know, you've got two guys that do some trellis, some big jobs, some small jobs, and their trellises look absolutely nothing like each other. So, I'm Switzerland and all of that, because I just like, you know, these are the two I have. Here's the phone numbers.
Right.
And then whoever gets it, they get the same price for me, and whoever gets it, you know, right. And you got to be fair that way. So,
sure. Of course. That makes sense.
So, I mean, this has been a big year for me as far as changeover.
Sure.
I was with Pine River for 7 years, mm-hmm. and created, you know, this customer base and all of this, you know, I was becoming the go-to, you know, for hop poles and cable and everything hop related. And, I made a decision, you know, that I thought was best for myself and my family. And that was to go out on my own. I parted excellently with the Pine River Group. I actually am selling product for them. Hmm. And so we broke well. All of my suppliers, came with me. So all of my wire guys, all of my pole guys, everybody, it's business as usual. Pricing is in line as it was, treating places are the same. So it was a really nice transition, but, you know, it's, I just wanted people to know that, you know, that I had started this and I have gone on, and, you know, if you've bought from me in the past, it's not going to be any different, than what it had been. So,
well, we're absolutely happy to help you out. We've been there.
I really appreciate this.
We're back there again, starting a new venture ourselves. So, but yep, Ron, you've helped me tremendously in the industry, and we've built a friendship, and we're going to be there for each other. That's what we do in the community. Holy smokes. I mean, there's just so much more we could talk about trellis stuff. So I'm guessing, based on the seasonality of this, this episode's going to get a lot of downloads and people are going to have questions. So we're definitely going to have you back.
Absolutely.
And we can talk cable. We can talk more anchors. We can talk about shipping and minimums and all that kind of stuff. But people need to understand this stuff before they get involved with it. So.
Well, we, you know, we do have our little game we haven't played.
Oh, we haven't played the game. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I wasn't told about any games.
So, Ron, we play a game called Beer or No. And the idea here is we've got a handful of beers I'm going to tell you about. And you're going to tell us if these are real beers or if this is just weird shit that we made up.
Okay.
And you know, I put together a huge list of these a while ago, and then we started getting some guests like yourself on, and I thought it'd be more fun to angle them toward our topic. So this is a hardware and architecture edition of Beer or No.
Oh, okay.
Right? So the first one, tell us if this is a beer or not, is Fulcrum Hefeweizen.
Well, I know that it's – so the beginning word of that, what was that one?
Fulcrum.
I would say it's a beer.
It is a beer. It's from Klirsky Brewing in the United Kingdom. So the next one here I've got is Turnbuckle Triple.
No.
That is from Momac Brewing in Virginia.
Wow, really?
Real beer.
No, it's Virginia, yes. Of course.
Wow, yeah. I would have voted with Ron on that one. Nice.
So, surprising amount of hardware-related beers out there. next one we've got, Underpinning Pilsner.
It's like, yes, it's a beer.
Nah, I made that one up. Okay, next one we have here is... Broken Carabiner, APA.
No.
That is close to you. It's from Icon Oak Brewing in Illinois.
Really? I was going to say that was a beer from like somewhere out in Portland, Carabiner with all the rock climbing and stuff.
There were a couple out there with Carabiner in them, but I liked Broken Carabiner the best. I thought that was a nice one. So next one here, What the Joist, double IPA.
No.
Okay, I made that one up. But there is a brewery in the Netherlands called Joyce de Visser. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong.
Probably, yes.
And the last one I've got here for you is Catastrophic Failure Sour.
It's like every sour.
It's a sour, so it probably is a catastrophic failure. yes, beer.
Yes, Cedar Creek Brewing in Texas.
Wow, well done, Ron.
Yeah, I mean, anything bad with sour, personally, for me, it makes sense. So.
Yeah, well, you're more of a whiskey guy, so.
Yeah, we just grow hops.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thanks for that, and I think we're going to wrap it up. So thanks for joining us, Ron.
Ron, thanks so much.
I appreciate your business in the past, James, and I always enjoy getting together, and I really appreciate this plug on the show. It really helps me out a lot. So.
Awesome. Thanks.